I'm very concerned about the lack of fiscal discipline by both Republicans and Democrats over the last 10 years.
The earmark debate takes center stage in the Republican primary campaign for U.S. House. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 19th of August. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, weather delays the Eagle hydroelectric system.
They never in their 30, 40 years of living in Eagle had seen the river so low so late in the year.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by North Rim Bank, helping you get from where you are to where you want to be. Achieve more. North Rim Bank for Business. Information at northrim.com. Member FDIC. And by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for over 50 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. Crowley.com.
Only one Democrat is running for Alaska's U.S. House seat. Harry Crawford is currently a state House member representing Anchorage and will be uncontested at the polls for Congress on Tuesday. But the Republican race has three candidates, two have never run for office before and are trying to take on incumbent Don Young, APRN's Libby Casey reports.
Congressman Don Young is the second longest serving Republican now in the U.S. House.
When I first got elected, everybody said it was a fluke. You know, I was there, and I wouldn't last a year.
19 terms and 37 years later, Young is still Alaska's only House member in Washington. He had his tightest race last time around when now Governor Sean Parnell came within about 300 votes of beating him. Earlier this month, Young announced that federal investigators told him they've wrapped up a look into his ethics and won't bring charges. He's refused to answer questions about it, though, and his opponents are clamoring for him to explain. The ethics investigation cost him the top or ranking Republican slot on the Natural Resources Committee 2 years ago, but Young says that's no big loss.
You know, I got to tell you something about being ranking. You're really not much. You're really just rank. You don't accomplish anything. If we take the majority, I'm going to be somewhere. I'll guarantee you that. I'm not sure where, but I will be a chairman of some committee. We'll be cross that bridge when it hasn't been built yet, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
After all these years, Young is still beating the drum of natural resource development and is against climate change bills. He's also one of only a handful of Republicans insisting on asking for earmarks, despite party leadership's order to curb them. He sticks by his belief that he and Alaskans who give him requests know better what to do with federal money than Obama bureaucrats, as he calls them.
I'm not picking a fight with the leadership. They are entitled to what they want, but if they lead me wrong, I'm not going to follow them. That has always been my MO.
Young declined joining a Tea Party caucus in the House this summer. He says it's nothing personal. He thinks the Tea Party is good for America, but he's not a joiner. One of his challengers in Tuesday's primary, John Cox, says he is Tea Party through and through, and he does not like earmarks.
And the reason being is that there's too much shady dealings going on in the background. If we put on a bill that we need to fix roads, that should be the only thing that's there. Let's fix the roads, not, you know, what some other congressman or senator wants to have his little pet project fixed. It has to stop.
Cox is a retired Navy veteran and has lived in Alaska since 1976. He's never run for office before, but feels compelled to serve.
This country in the past has entrusted me with the lives of their husbands, sons, and daughters, and I've never lost a life while I was in charge. And I'm asking the people of this great state to trust me once again. Trust me with the protection of our lifestyle.
Cox says he's only raised about $400 for his campaign, compared to the hundreds of thousands of dollars his competitors have raked in. He says he just doesn't believe in taking people's money for ads.
People have tried to give me money for a campaign, and I've refused it and turned it back into them. I said, listen, give it to your church. Give it to a senior center. Give it to a teacher. Let's help out Alaskans.
The third candidate, Sheldon Fisher, says he also wants earmark reform. He's a former executive at telecommunications company ACS, who's lived in Alaska for 6 years. He's traveling the road system so people can meet him, and he can get to know areas with which he's not familiar. But he hasn't been to any remote villages.
I feel like I need to win my share and to make sure I've got a presence there. But this election and the last number of elections have really been won or lost in the large population areas.
Fisher wants to start over with healthcare legislation and this time focus entirely on cutting costs. His number one goal is paying off the national debt.
I'm very concerned about the lack of fiscal discipline by both Republicans and Democrats over the last 10 years. Both parties, I think, have been unwilling to make the hard decisions. And I believe Don Young's been part of that problem.
Fisher says Representative Young's my way or the highway approach and comments have hurt Alaska, like when the congressman said the Gulf of Mexico BP blowout was not an environmental disaster.
This is where I take issue with some of the statements with Mr. Young is that, you know, he perpetuates this view that we're not sensitive to some of the environmental concerns. And I think that's a mistake. And I think that if Americans could understand how we exploit resources, what we do, and how we can also preserve resources, they would be more supportive than perhaps they have been.
Both Sheldon Fisher and John Cox hope the anti-incumbent mood of the country is also alive in Alaska. They'll find out on Tuesday. In Anchorage, I'm Libby Casey.
Oil taxes may be the defining issue in the Democratic primary race for Alaska governor. Former state representative Ethan Berkowitz would throw out the state's current severance tax system and replace it with a negotiated royalty tax. His opponent, State Senator Hollis French, says don't change what's working. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander takes a look at the candidate's different oil tax strategies.
As legislators, Senator Hollis French and former House member Ethan Berkowitz were generally on the same side of the issue. But when it comes to oil taxes,
it's a huge difference, and people should not make it any smaller than it is.
Berkowitz says if Alaska keeps doing what it's doing, it's going to get what it's got.
And what we've got is declining oil production.
French says in a state where oil funds nearly 90% of government,
we're prepared for the future now due to the fact that we put a good oil tax on the books.
Berkowitz represented Anchorage in the House from 1996 to 2006 and was House Minority Leader for 8 of those years. He ran unsuccessfully for Lieutenant Governor in 2006 and for Congress in 2008. French is in his third term in the State Senate representing Anchorage. This is his first run for statewide office. French was among Democratic legislators in 2007 who worked with then-Governor Sarah Palin and other Republicans to rewrite the tax so Alaska would earn more from its oil. Berkowitz watched from afar. He agrees the state needed a change, but says the new system, called ACES, does not provide the kind of fiscal stability that will lead to increased production. ACES stands for Alaska's Clear and Equitable Share. He would replace it with a negotiated royalty tax on new fields, customizing what he calls the current one-size-fits-all system.
We have a system under current statute that allows for royalty relief on a field-by-field basis, subject to a number of statutory provisions. So the system that I propose would allow for field-by-field negotiations and do it in a way so that professionals are making the initial round of negotiations.
Those professionals would be a state board Berkowitz would create. He says the plan is built around the genius of the Alaska Permanent Fund, where 25% of all mineral royalties are now deposited.
And the genius of the Permanent Fund is we took a non-renewable resource and converted it into something renewable.
In the Berkowitz plan, royalties from each field would be saved in a permanent fund type account and the income used to operate state government.
That gives us long-term fiscal stability.
French believes ACES has and will continue to provide the state fiscal stability.
We had been studying this issue for years. We had access to experts. We did our hearings in the open. We took in the information, and we crafted a fair, tough oil tax that finally got Alaska its fair share for the first time in a long time.
And when oil prices spiked in 2008,
when oil prices hit $145 a barrel, we had a strong oil tax in place. We put $5 billion into savings that year. We've built our savings account to $12 billion. We are in probably the best financial shape we've been in as a state.
Economist Doug Reynolds says ACES was well studied and carefully evaluated. The University of Alaska Fairbanks professor and oil and gas expert says it's working just the way it should. The tax goes down when oil prices are low and up when prices climb.
Typical thing in all the oil countries is when oil prices are low, you give in to the oil companies and try and give better tax breaks. Then when oil prices go up, you kind of go into the other extreme of taxing too heavily. And I thought ACES was right in the middle, right where we needed to be.
Former state oil and gas director Dan Dickinson, now an independent consultant, sees strengths and weaknesses in both ACES and the Berkowitz proposal.
The main thing that I like about the Berkowitz proposal is it takes a very unstable source of revenue, which are progressive oil taxes, which as prices bounce up and down, the state take is going to bounce up and down, and puts them into a separate fund, whether it's a permanent fund or a new fund, and then allows for a certain amount to be pulled out each year and turns them into a stable funding source.
While Reynolds says it would be extremely difficult for the state to negotiate royalty contracts by field, Dickinson says the state is certainly in a strong enough position to bargain with the oil companies. The primary election is Tuesday. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
The state of Alaska has confirmed at least two cases of salmonella matching the strain tied to recalled eggs. Greg Wilkinson, a spokesman for the state health department, says that in at least one of the cases in Anchorage, the person did eat eggs. He says it's not yet clear whether the second person in Homer also did. The state reports a suspected case of salmonella in Girdwood, but tests are pending. He says that person reported eating raw egg in cookie dough. Kimberly Stryker, an environmental program manager with the State Department of Environmental Conservation, says at least one statewide retailer in Alaska reports receiving eggs affected by the massive recall. She didn't identify the retailer, but says the eggs were repackaged under the Olympia Valley label. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a bleak Yukon River fall chum run.
Maybe the fish are just late. We're never sure until the end of the season.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA.
Alaska will benefit from another round of broadband internet access grants, the White House announced yesterday. The state share of the stimulus money is $7 million. The funds will be used to subsidize satellite broadband service for 5,000 households in rural Alaska. John Douglas is communications director for SpaceNet, the company that will implement the grant. He says rural Alaska presents unique challenges for broadband access.
There's virtually no way of laying fiber or terrestrial options that would cover any reasonable part of Alaska. So by doing this, they enable providers like us to utilize our existing satellite infrastructure to target all of the rural areas or virtually all of the rural areas of Alaska with real broadband coverage and offer it at a very subsidized price.
The grant money will subsidize the installation of the necessary equipment at each house and the monthly service cost for 1 year. The subsidies are only available in rural Alaska. Commerce Secretary Gary Locke says getting high-speed internet to rural areas is just as important as electrification was in the 1930s. He calls it a necessity.
We're seeing that without this high-speed internet investment by the federal government, so many of the for-profit independent internet service providers don't find it economical to go into these regions. And so this is really very much about job creation and helping businesses throughout America be more competitive, stronger, and more viable.
SpaceNet will offer the subsidized service through its satellite internet provider, Starband. The company doesn't know yet when the subsidies will be available. After a string of weather-related delays, a small hydroelectric system at Eagle is finally up and running. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The 25-kilowatt turbine, powered by the waters of the Yukon River, began operating last week after it was first installed in June by the utility serving the area, Alaska Power and Telephone. As of August 11th, the hydrokinetic turbine, as it's called, was generating 15 to 17 kilowatts for the 200 residents of Eagle and Eagle Village. The utility hopes the system will bring electricity to remote communities located so far off the grid that they either can't get power or can't afford it. But the project is several weeks behind schedule. AP&T spokesman Mark McCready says that's because of weather-related problems. The first was a lack of runoff due to last winter's sparse snowpack and then a dry, hot spring, which combined to make the Yukon run low.
And in talking with the people of Eagle as well as our manager in Eagle, they never in their 30, 40 years of living in Eagle had seen the river so low so late in the year.
In early summer, heavy rains set in, swelling the Yukon and filling it with logs and other debris and repeatedly washing out the roads leading to Eagle.
When the rain finally did come, with it came the debris issues that we had to deal with. And so the combination of the weather, the amount of debris that came for an extended period of time, that really set us back. We basically had to take the barge out. The river was so high, it was so fast, there was so much in it. And then you combine that with the logistics of just getting equipment and manpower back and forth because of just the incredible amount of washouts on the Taylor Highway and over the top of the World Highway. That really set us back almost a month due to Mother Nature.
The turbine was designed to provide much of the power needed for both Eagle and Eagle Village during the months when the Yukon is ice-free. AP&T hopes the turbine will save the utility more than $300,000 annually using hydropower to generate electricity instead of fuel for diesel generators, which is very expensive to truck in. The river turbine also will reduce the utility's output of greenhouse gases by taking some of the load off of the utility's diesel generators. Eagle Mayor Beau Fay says he'd like to see those sorts of cost savings, but because the system is operating at less than full capacity, he's skeptical.
I'd be surprised if it proved to be feasible. I heard secondhand that it's only putting out about 12 kW or something.
Still, says Jim Norman, president of a Fairbanks company contracted to work on the project, just getting the Eagle turbine up and running is an important technological and logistical feat.
And when we can have a project like the Eagle project that actually work, you know, and prove up on a technology that hasn't really been proven up on before, that's a significant event.
Norman's company, ABS Alaskan, was hired to install the system by the turbine manufacturer, New Energy Corporation of Calgary, Alberta. McCready says AP&T is now studying the possibility of installing a second turbine in the Yukon at Eagle. He said AP&T officials have gotten inquiries about the Eagle turbine from a company installing a new energy river turbine in a remote location in Canada.
Up in the Northwest Territories at this point, I know that there is one that was going on the Mackenzie River, and we're hopeful of getting a little more information about how their deployment went and exactly where they're at on that project.
The Denali Commission of Alaska contributed $3.2 million in grants to build the Eagle turbine. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Alaska Center for Energy and Power is helping oversee grants and coordinating research and engineering for the project. In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Yukon River Fall Chum Salmon Run is lagging way behind expectations. State Fall Chum Manager Jeff Estenson says past the normal midpoint of the run, less than half the median number of fish have been counted by the state's sonar at Pilot Station.
Our total abundance right now is estimated to be 200,000 fish, which is well below the historical average of 550,000 fish for that date.
Estenson says the entire fall chum run is projected at this point to come in below 400,000 fish. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Yukon Fisheries biologist Fred Bew says things look bleak, but it's still possible that the latter portion of the run could pick up.
Right now we're close to the bottom threshold where we may make the low end of our escapement objective, but our test nets at the mouth are picking up and indicating there's a pulse of fish coming in, so maybe the fish are just late. We're never sure until the end of the season.
There's been no commercial fishing for fall chums, and managers close subsistence fishing until tomorrow. After that, it will reopen for 2 48-hour periods per week. Sport fishing for fall chums will close tomorrow. The restrictions come after weeks of high water that have already limited fishing success, a Yukon Chinook run that was very weak, and an average summer chum return. Bew says both the Chinook and fall chum runs are the product of strong parent years, but there's speculation that heavy eggs production can lead to increased mortality.
There's been some thought that, you know, there's some bacteria or fungus that may kill fish eggs while they're in the gravel, potentially, if eggs are concentrated too closely together, and it's not good for the eggs.
Bew stresses that there are a lot of factors that affect salmon survival, including water temperature and spring breakup conditions. The weak Yukon Chinook and fall chum runs have hit Canadian fishermen especially hard, as the two species are the ones that migrate to upstream spawning grounds past the border.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com. If you smoke, odds are you want to quit. And if you want to quit, you're probably finding it tough to do. The Alaska Tobacco Quit Line can help. The average smoker tries 10 times before they quit for good. You can increase your chances by calling the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line. A trained quit coach is waiting for your call. Give it a shot. It's free and it works. Call the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line at 1-888-842-7848. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line.
Primary voters will decide whether parents should be automatically notified if their minor-age daughter seeks an abortion. KSKA's Len Anderson takes a look at Ballot Measure 2.
Ballot Measure 2 is abortion for minor requires notice to or consent from parent or guardian or through judicial bypass. Currently in Alaska, a female under 18 years of age may have an abortion without parental approval or notification. Ballot Measure 2 seeks to establish notification procedures before the abortion could take place. Bernadette Wilson is the campaign manager of Alaskans for Parental Rights. Vote yes on 2.
This becomes law. Now, a physician would have to notify a parent 48 hours before performing an abortion. If the parent were to give consent, it would waive the waiting period of 48 hours. And in the event that there is not a parent involved, there is an affidavit or judicial bypass, which would in turn waive parental notification.
The measure regards legal guardians the same as parents. Wilson says Ballot Measure 2 follows an already existing legal pattern.
You look at laws right now, from a child getting her ears pierced, to taking an Advil, to going on a field trip. You know, your child cannot go on a field trip unless that parent signs a permission slip. You know, a dentist couldn't perform any type of procedure on a minor child without the parent knowing. So it's simply common sense.
The abortion could proceed even if the parents object, as long as they are notified in advance. To obtain a judicial notification waiver, the minor, along with an adult relative or authorized official with personal knowledge of her situation, would need to appear in court in person or via affidavit and describe a home or abuse situation that justifies suspending parental notification. The measure also makes it a felony for a doctor to perform an abortion on a woman under 18 without first providing notification. The doctor would also have to submit reports.
The majority of teens facing an unplanned pregnancy are already involving a parent or another trusted adult.
Rhiannon Good is the campaign manager for Alaskans Against Government Mandates. Vote no on 2. She says her Vote No group is concerned about those teens who might not have a good home life.
We know there's teens that are facing troubled homes. They may be facing abuse at home. Their homes may have drug or alcohol problems. They could be facing worse situations. And for those teens, the thought of having a note sent home to their parents or a doctor calling their parents, that's terrifying. we think that scared, desperate teens do scary and desperate things.
The vote yes backers charge that not requiring more reporting could send the teenage girl back into a possibly sexual abusive situation. Good disagrees.
Organizations like Planned Parenthood and other doctors who perform these procedures, they take their duty to report situations of suspected abuse very, very seriously. And Planned Parenthood routinely works with law enforcement, and they routinely work with social services if they suspect any abuse, whether it's by a client's partner or suspected abuse from her family.
Good says state records show fewer than 150 teens under 18 had abortions in 2009. An earlier parental consent law, rather than a notification law, was declared unconstitutional in 2007 by the Alaska Supreme Court as an invasion of the minor's right to privacy. In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
Only a few voters in next week's primary elections will have to make choices for next year's legislature. That's because most of the legislative seats will have opposition only in November's general election. Only one Democratic incumbent faces a primary challenger, Neil Foster of Nome, who was appointed to finish the term to which his father was elected before he died. Foster is challenged by Vincent Beans of Mountain Village, a member of the Lower Yukon Regional School Board. Few, if any, serious issues have developed for the five current House Republican races with intra-party challengers. Peggy Wilson of Wrangell faces Steve Samuelson. MatSU's Carl Gatto is challenged by Don Benson. Big Lakes' Mark Newman faces newcomer Stephen Jacobson. Cherise Millett goes up against 10-year Alaska resident Jeanette Reddington, and Anchorage's Bob Lynn, who is running for his fifth term.
You know, I've worked very hard to represent you honestly and effectively, and quite frankly, I think I've done a pretty good job. But this election is not about the past. This election is about the future. Our future, the future of our children, our grandchildren, the future of everybody we love.
His challenger is Steve Pratt, an economist and businessman.
What I offer, I bring to the campaign is I offer fresh eyes, responsive ears, and with substantial public and private sector professional, economic, and energy experience, an authoritative voice.
None of the 10 Senate primary races involve incumbents, but one race has three Republicans vying to replace longtime lawmaker Con Bundy. Kathy Giesel is a registered nurse, Jennifer Johnston, a member of the Anchorage Assembly, and Mark Morinal, an Anchorage cardiologist. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We've posted a slideshow there of pictures from Senator Ted Stevens' memorial service yesterday. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We have reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander in Juneau, Tim Ellis and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Anchorage, and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development. The Federal Housing Administration's network of FHA-approved housing counseling agencies offers free expert advice to homeowners whose mortgages are at risk, underwater, or in need of refinancing. Visit hud.gov/Alaska for a counselor near you. This message sponsored by HUD.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.